God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
There are many examples of the Bible showing how God does things. One of the ways that God does things is to call people into service. This is Pastor Larry. Thanks for joining us on the show. Did God need Joshua and Caleb to conquer the Promised Land? Did He need Paul to bring the gospel to the Gentiles? Did God need Peter to share the gospel with Cornelius and his household? You know, I've heard well-meaning people say, God doesn't need your help. Well, that's true. But it's also true that He gives us the privilege of working with Him and for Him. God doesn't need your help is a statement that is often made by pietists. Pietism is that expression of Christianity that does not want to get its hands dirty. Pietists believe that the ideal Christian is someone who walks around shuffling his or her feet in an apologetic, mousy manner that apologizes for breathing. Oh, excuse me, sir, I didn't mean to breathe your air. Pietism so stresses the personal and relational aspect of our walk with Christ that it forgets that Jesus went into the temple and drove out the money changers. Jesus was gentle and kind, but that is not the only side of Jesus that we see in the Bible. He was certainly a meek person. Meek does not mean weak, but rather it speaks of strength under God's authority. Our guest for today's show is Bill Federer. I want to read from the back cover of Bill's book titled, Who is the King in America? On the back cover, we read these words, quote, Who is the King in America? Before you answer, do you know what the most common form of government in world history is? And then we read, From the invention of writing around 3300 BC, the world has been mostly ruled by kings. The author of those words, Bill Federer, is with us. Bill, thanks for being on the show with us once again.
Larry, thank you.
Well, you pointed out that power, like gravity, concentrates into the hands of one person who rewards his friends and punishes his enemies. I agree with President Ronald Reagan. He said, we're just one generation away from tyranny. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic may have brought us a lot closer to tyranny than most of us realize. But on our previous program, you were speaking about Machiavelli, and maybe there are more things that you want to say about that we can apply to the situation today.
Right. So in times of crises, insecurity, people surrender their rights and freedoms to somebody promising to fix it. And so the first invention ever was the plow. Cain was a tiller of the soil, and then people started hitting each other with it, and they began to turn into weapons, and so people felt insecure, and they gravitated together for protection, and this formed the first cities. Now, when you get people together, someone's a little better at knowing how to fight than the rest, and everyone say, you be our captain. And so you fight, you win, that's a good thing, and then this captain ends up being treated really special and having kids and grandkids that claim to be an elite class, an elite family, and everybody pays them deference. And before you know it, it turns into a political family, a sort of a gang, sort of a mob boss, a king. And we even see scriptural ideas of this. So when Israel was a republic during the period of the judges, they would have a crisis and they all went to Jephthah and they say, look, you be our captain. Even your kids can reign after you. And then same thing to Gideon. They said, you know, you and your sons reign over us. And to Gideon's credit, he says, the Lord is your king. But it's this reaction that people say, okay, we need somebody. And so the concentrating of power at first is good because it gets you through a crisis. You survive an attack. But then it ends up flipping the form of government from the people being in charge to a top-down form of government. And we see this with King Saul. So the children of Israel, the priests stopped teaching the law. You had all kinds of immorality and, you know, Levites with concubines. The law says the Levites to marry a virgin of his own tribe. And so there's this Levite with a concubine. He's not following the law. They're in a house surrounded by sodomites. Something about that behavior that appears at the last stages of the people ruling themselves is casting off of self-restraint. And they're not content with doing whatever they do. They want to force it on these people coming in town, this Levite and his concubine. So they bang on the door. The poor girl gets raped to death. And by the time you're grossed out with the story, it says every man did that which was right in their own eyes. Why? Because the priests had stopped teaching them what was right in the Lord's eyes. So it turned into this chaos. They all go to Samuel the prophet. They say, we want to be like the other countries. We want a king. Samuel cries, and the Lord tells him, they did not reject you. They rejected me. So God's original plan for Israel was to have the power of a king separated into the hands of the people, and each person taught the law by the Levites, and each person accountable to God to follow the law. And it worked for these 400 years. Once they got a King Saul, there's a story that's very instructive. Saul is touting that his son, Jonathan, made a league with David. And he tells his soldiers, none of you care about me. And one of them, Doeg the Edomite, says, King, I care. I saw David go to this town. The priests gave him some bread, gave him the sword of Goliath. Saul says, bring those priests here. Turn to his men, says, kill them. The men hesitate. Doeg the Edomite says, I'll kill him, and kills them all. What just happened? The soldiers had been operating under the old system, where every person is personally accountable to God to follow the law, and the law says you need two or more witnesses before you condemn somebody to death. There's only one witness, Doeg. So the soldiers are hesitating. They still have a conscience. And Doeg says, King, I'm going to surrender my conscience to you. You tell me to kill, I'll kill. And so whenever you get a king, a dictator, he wants you to surrender your conscience. He wants to force you to give up your deeply held religious convictions. There was a candidate who spoke at, you know, Saddleback Church saying, oh, marriage is sacred between a man and a woman. And then this candidate gets elected. And on a dime, he turns and says, I'm pushing gay marriage. And if you don't like it, I'm going to send my Department of Justice in to sue you. And he expected the whole country to immediately turn on a dime and follow him. He says, when I say there's no more male and female, you've got to jump and say how hot, right? The king, when Nebuchadnezzar said, look, when I blow my trumpet, you bow to my statue. I don't care if you have a warm feeling in your heart for my statue. You bow, or I'm going to throw you in the fiery furnace. And even King Henry in England had William Tyndale burnt at the stake for not believing what he wanted him to believe. So kings want to dictate your beliefs. I personally believe we are experiencing a reprieve from that agenda being implemented. But if the elections change and you get one of these governors that's in one of these states that's closing down churches as unnecessary but keeping abortion clinics and marijuana shops and liquor stores open, what if you had one of those type of governors as the president? It'd shut down the whole church in America. What would we do? And then they force everybody to get vaccinated and take some kind of mark, or they're developing a type of invisible tattoo mark if you've gotten the vaccine. And we can see where this is headed. It's the government wanting to take control of people's lives.
Well, November the 3rd, 2020, that's a very important date. No question about it. I mean, I just shudder to think of what happens if somebody else gets in. I mean, those Democrats are really left-wing. But, you know, COVID-19 is a worldwide crisis. It's also a serious crisis for the American economy. And, you know, America's economy has been doing very well under the Trump administration. Unemployment for blacks and Hispanics is at a record low. So I think we're on the same page here. We think that this crisis is being used by those who want to see the downfall of America and the end of free market capitalism.
Right. So the example that we have is Herbert Hoover. Who was he? He was an international businessman in mining. Right? He was a Quaker, went to Stanford University in the very first class, got his degree in mining, worked for some country in Australia in mining, and then he ended up taking ownership in different mines. And before you know it, he has offices in London and India and Russia, all around the world. And then there's World War I. And Herbert Hoover organizes the feeding of millions of people in Europe. And he does it through all kinds of private and charitable organizations. Then there's the 1927 Mississippi flood, and the dikes break, the levees break, and just floods out tens of thousands of people. And Herbert Hoover organizes voluntary organizations and private sector groups to meet the need of this 1927 Mississippi flood. And he is so popular, he's swept in as the president, and he's only in less than a year when the stock market crashes. Did you know Herbert Hoover never took a salary from the government? But this crisis happens. He begins to do what? Implement private sector solutions, charity organizations responding. But the Democrat Party sabotaged all his efforts. and the Democrat Party had a candidate named Franklin Roosevelt saying, the big government will come in and answer everything. And everybody wanted this quick fix, right, because they were in this painful crisis, and they're like, this guy promises to fix it all right away. And so FDR gets in, has the government take over, outlaw gold ownership, outlaw all kinds of situations, driving people off their homes in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and then instituting all these alphabet soup government agencies and so forth. But in the time of crises, power was concentrated. And again, the quote from Milton Friedman, he said, concentrated power is not rendered harmless by the good intentions of those who create it.
I know there are a lot of people out there who want to see a cashless society. And, you know, there's talk now, well, money's dirty, you know, and you get change or give change. The person who gives you a $10 bill may be passing on COVID-19. So I think, you know, everything that's happening now is going to be used to bring in some kind of a new world situation. And, you know, if you have a chip under your forehead or your hand, it'll be a lot safer than passing money on. So I think we're in a real peril today. And I think a lot of Americans don't realize what's going on. In fact, if they don't know Bible prophecy, they think you and I and so many of us who believe in the veracity of the Bible, even in the end times, they think we're a bunch of nuts and crazy people. But we know what's going on, and we know what the left is trying to do. And as a matter of fact, they're running for president.
Right. You know, in Illinois, they just introduced a bill that there would be no religious exceptions for vaccines. So this is the government saying, look, we want to do a mandatory vaccine on everybody. You have different people saying, okay, you should get some kind of digital certificate once you get the vaccine, very much like a mark. And then in some of the New England states, they've actually bought drones from China to follow people around to make sure they're, quote unquote, social distancing. And so we're seeing this crisis used. Now, the vaccines, Kenya, the Catholic Church in Kenya is suing this global vaccine company because millions of these young girls were vaccinated and now they cannot have children. And it's interesting, the founder of one of the software companies was giving a TED talk and he says, well, with vaccines, we can do this, that, and the other, and we can lower population growth. You can go on the internet and find it. It's like lower population growth with a vaccine. Yeah, they want to put stuff in there that'll make people sterile. And then in India, they're actually suing one of these big vaccine makers. Why? Because 500,000 Indian children got paralyzed after taking some vaccine. So those that have embraced that the world's overpopulated and want to reduce the world population, now they're involved in making vaccines. This should be a cause for concern. But I do, I talked about it in another interview, but Karl Marx, he adopted Hegel's philosophy that you have to create a problem so people want your answer. And so Karl Marx developed this concept where you send in troublemakers, agent provocateurs, community organizers, labor organizers, to find people who have grievances and you stir them up to riot. So he'd organize the proletariat against the bourgeois, which is the working class against the business owners. He'd organize the blacks against the whites, the Muslims against the Christians, even the Hutus against the Tutsis in the Congo and Rwanda. This doesn't really matter who the two sides are. Doesn't really matter what the issues are. The goal is to create a crisis that is so disturbing, everyone is willing to knee-jerk react and surrender their freedom to somebody promising to fix it. And so this is how 45 countries fell to communism. But this influenced somebody named Saul Alinsky. He rode around with Al Capone's hitmen in Chicago and saw how Frank Nitti. So how all you had to do was kill a few people, smash a few windows, and the whole neighborhood would panic and submit to the mob and pay extortion protection money. And so Saul Alinsky applied this to politics. He said, all you got to do is create a crisis. So he says that the community organizer's job is to rub raw the resentments of the people of the community, fan the flames of hostility to the point of overt expression. The community organizer must seek out controversy rather than avoid it. For unless there is controversy, the people are not motivated enough to act. And Hillary Clinton did her senior thesis at Wellesley College on Saul Alinsky. And President Obama was a community organizer with Saul Alinsky's group in Chicago. So this is the politics that has been played out in America, the intentional creating or capitalizing on crises to push agendas where the government takes rights and control from people's lives. Rahm Emanuel, who was the campaign manager for Obama, said, never let a good crisis go to waste. It's an opportunity to push your agenda. And so we have to understand that, yes, there's a crisis, but is it being used to have a concentrating of power into the hands of the government? And again, we see this being implemented with no concern for the church, that they'll keep marijuana shops open, but they have to close down churches.
I think the idea of worshiping online and at our church, we do it on Zoom. I have no problem with that. I think that's a good idea. But when the government mandates closing the doors and closing the church, then I have a real problem. So I think, you know, if it's voluntary, great. But when this higher power says you must or else, that I think is very, very dangerous. Well, Bill, as always, it's a great blessing to have you on. We're certainly looking forward to seeing you in Ohio, September the 24th through the 26th. Our announcer, Matthew, will come and tell you what we have to offer our listeners.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the book, Who is the King in America? Have you ever wondered what is the most popular form of government? Since around 3000 BC, the world has been mostly ruled by kings. You can have a copy of this extraordinary DVD for a gift of $20 in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our call center at 1-800-652-1144. The operators will be happy to help you. And of course, you can order this book and any of our materials on our website at swrc.com. We also have the book with the same title, Who is the King in America? The book is for a gift of $20. Better yet, get both the DVD and the book for a gift of $35. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. And the website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
Dr. Eran Ben-David, an infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine with Stanford Health Policy, led a study that shows that the actual number of COVID-19 infected persons in Santa Clara County, California, was 50 to 85 times more than the official count at the time of the study.
This has implications for learning how far we are in the course of the epidemic, Ben-David told the San Jose Mercury News. It has implications for epidemic models that are being used to design policies and estimate what it means for our healthcare system. Those who test positive for the COVID-19 antibody, whether or not they develop symptoms, are believed to have some degree of immunity to the disease. Close quotes.
Other sources, such as USA Today, are skeptical of the significance of the Stanford study, affirming that no one knows for sure if those who had COVID-19 have really developed an effective immunity to the disease. They claim that vaccination is a better way of developing immunity. USA Today is also claiming that there are those who believe that, quote, herd immunity, not social distancing, would stop COVID-19. Well, friends, sorry, but that's not what is being claimed. No one is claiming that herd immunity would stop COVID-19 any more than social distancing would stop COVID-19. The reason the Stanford study is significant is that it shows that there are large numbers of people who have COVID-19 with little or no effect.
It's also true that those who are in favor of keeping the United States under lockdown because of the seriousness of COVID-19 only cite the number of deaths. They don't cite the number of people, sometimes in the thousands, who have recovered, and we don't even have an approved vaccine yet.
Well, you're absolutely right, Marvin. If there is ever a glimmer of hope of this pandemic, you can be rest assured that the standard media will be critical of it. A good example is the case of Knut Witkowski, a former biostatistician at the Rockefeller University, who claimed in an interview that social distancing is not the right way to handle the pandemic. USA Today wanted to make sure that no one would get too positive about that, so it reported that the Rockefeller University released a statement April 13 saying Witkowski's views, quote, do not represent the views of the Rockefeller University, its leadership, or its faculty, close quotes. Well, you know, you can be rest assured that the media does not want any good news being received by the American people. Now, why is that? Well, they might vote for Donald Trump November the 3rd, 2020. That's really what is driving the news, hatred for Trump and his conservative views. The blue logo of China's state-run construction company looms over major construction sites from Nigeria to Ethiopia. China has taken advantage of the urbanization push across Africa, offering infrastructure for airports, hospitals, and rail stations. It is part of their plan for world domination. That opens the doors for profit-seeking businessmen and Chinese state employees. The Migration Policy Institute estimates that about 1 million Chinese migrants are on the African continent. At least 350,000 of them reside in South Africa.
The migrant population has created a unique evangelism opportunity for Christian missionaries and Chinese converts to Christianity. The South African Chinese Outreach Network, known as SACON, has made outreach to Chinese nationals in Africa their target group. People from South Africa wanted to go to China to share the word of God, but China is now at their doorstep.
Carl Teichert, an American missionary who leads the South African Chinese Outreach Network, came to South Africa in 1997 with his wife Jenny and their four children. He had worked as an engineer for the city of Los Angeles, California for 14 years before their involvement in inner-city ministry sparked a desire for a more global outreach. The couple now work as missionaries as they help with church planning and leadership development.
Teicher continues to develop outreach ideas. Their approach includes speaking at local churches to encourage ministry and connecting with Chinese converts who can help bridge language and cultural barriers. The network now includes about 30 Chinese leaders across the region.
As we move on, I want to look at the life of Jesus and the testimony of Jesus. And so let me ask, have you ever been good and mad? Jesus was good and he was mad. Mark 3, verse 5 says he looked around at the religious leaders with anger. They were watching him to see if he would heal the man with a withered hand on the Sabbath. Their hearts were hard, and it grieved Jesus. Some people think it's strange that Jesus would be mad. Many have made Jesus into a soft, fuzzy, politically correct hippie who never got angry at anything. The real Jesus did. He got good and mad. In Mark chapter 11, we read that Jesus got good and mad when he saw the money changers in the temple. He overturned their tables and threw them out of the temple.
In April of 1980, 13-year-old Carrie Leitner of Fair Oaks, California, was walking along a quiet road on her way to a church activity. Suddenly, a car swerved out of control, striking Carrie and killing her. Carrie's mother, Candy Leitner, studied the circumstances of her daughter's tragic death. That made her good and mad. When police arrested Clarence Bush, the driver who killed Carrie, they found that he had a record of arrest for intoxication. He had, in fact, been arrested on another hit-and-run drunk driving charge less than a week earlier. Candy Leitner learned that drunk driving was hardly ever regarded as a serious offense. She also learned that Clarence Bush was unlikely to spend time behind bars for the death of her daughter. In the year when Carrie Leitner was killed, there were some 27,000 alcohol-related fatalities in the United States, 2,500 in California alone. Candy Leitner got good and mad. She decided to take action against what she later called the only socially accepted form of homicide. The organization MADD, M-A-D-D, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, was formed by a mother who got good and mad.
There are so many things going on in our country and world that ought to make us good and mad. At one time, Americans were assured that abortion would be safe and rare. Today, we know that it is neither safe and it is certainly not rare. It has often been said that a Christian is someone who loves what Jesus loves and hates what Jesus hates. A godly anger, some call it a righteous indignation, is what we see in the character makeup of Jesus. In Ephesians 4:26, the Bible says, "Be ye angry and sin not. Don't let the sun go down on your anger." Christians need to remember that God has called us to be salt and light. It is time for all of us to reflect on our affections. Are we really salty? Do we shine the light of truth in a dark and decaying world? Are we impacting our culture for good?
Pastor Larry, every day in America, 30 people die as a result of drunk driving. That's one person every 48 minutes. And every day, about 800 people are injured in a drunk driving accident. 57% of fatally injured drivers had alcohol and/or drugs in their system. 17% had both, drugs and alcohol. Now just think about the states that legalize marijuana. That figure is going to skyrocket. Every time some nut with a gun kills a bunch of people, the Democrats start screaming about taking away our constitutional right to own a firearm. With these numbers that I just mentioned about drunk driving, you would think the left would have a field day with that. If they are so concerned about life, which they are not, just ask Planned Parenthood. If they are so concerned about life, why doesn't any one of the 25 Democrats running for president say anything about it? They don't say, "We're going to take away your cars. We're going to outlaw alcohol." It's just more hypocrisy, Pastor Larry.
Well, I think you're right, Marvin. I think when you look at the agenda of the Democrats, they have an agenda. And it's certainly not to save lives. It's certainly not to make America great again. I love the MAGA hat, the red MAGA hat. It makes some people furious. And I think what I love about Christians today, there are so many, like those who are listening to us, want to know the truth so they can stand for the truth.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the book, Who is the King in America? Have you ever wondered what is the most popular form of government? Since around 3000 BC, the world has been mostly ruled by kings. You can have a copy of this extraordinary DVD for a gift of $20 in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our call center at 1-800-652-1144. The operators will be happy to help you. And of course, you can order this book and any of our materials on our website at swrc.com. We also have the book with the same title, Who is the King in America? The book is for a gift of $20. Better yet, get both the DVD and the book for a gift of $35. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. And the website is swrc.com. Thanks for being with us. Make plans now to be here tomorrow on the Watchman on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Ministries.